welcome.
Thanks for being here. Topic today in this breakout is going to be knowing through authenticity. Okay, knowing through authenticity. And you're going to see us interchange the words authenticity and vulnerability pretty seamlessly. But as Caleb just mentioned in that main session, one of the key things that he sees sometimes with couples, as he works with couples, is the idea of turning towards each other in a level of vulnerability and that power that has upon a relationship. We're talking here in marriage context, but I think it goes throughout relationships. The power of breaking down walls through that openness, that vulnerability, is critical. And so we're going to spend some time walking through it together today. My wife Katie and I are here together to share, and are excited about that. So I want to start just with a quote, and I'm going to paraphrase it because I'm not going to get it quite right. But I think it captures this whole idea of love and vulnerability. And the author says something to this effect. He says, to love at all is to be vulnerable. Right? If we are going to engage in a loving relationship with another person, that is vulnerable in itself. Because there's another option, and the option is that we can just kind of build walls around our heart, and we can kind of keep it closed off, even locked away, and never let anybody in, and never open ourselves up to any type of risk. But in that setting, the heart will wither and it will die. That's what he says. That heart will wither and it will die, because that's not what it's meant to be. To love at all is to be vulnerable. To open yourself up to each other, to put yourself into relationship with someone else is by itself, by its nature, a level of vulnerability. And a level of risk that we have to be willing to engage in. And we heard that already this morning, the risk of desiring connection, and yet that deep need within each of us that drives us towards connection. And so today, this morning, we hope to kind of lay out a few ideas, a few principles. It won't be exhaustive by any means, but these are some things to think about as we think about what does it mean to be vulnerable.
That graphic, too, in your hand, is hopefully to kind of step through what some of these key words and key phrases and so forth look like. I used a Venn diagram. If there's any teachers in here, you know what that means, right? The it's not inclusive all of itself. So each of these four is going to overlap at some point. Okay, so that's the graphic you have in front of you. Okay. Vulnerability is a very kind of key word right now, right? We want authentic vulnerability in marriage. We want authentic vulnerability in relationships. Why can't this person be vulnerable with me? Why can't I be vulnerable with them? It's kind of this buzzword, right? That you hear a lot, but grabbing it and getting it and holding on to it is a different world entirely. Okay. So four things we're going to start with, but to begin with, the secular definition of what vulnerability is kind of fascinating to think about, okay? And that definition is this: to show emotion is the first word there, to show emotion or allow one's weaknesses to be seen or known. To show emotions or allow one's weaknesses to be seen or known is vulnerability. Some of those words up there maybe made you twinge a little bit, right? A weakness, emotions. One gender in here is maybe more likely to understand emotions or show emotions than the other. We won't say which one specifically. But even that word weakness, whether it's a marriage relationship or not, weakness is in today's world and culture. That's a hard word, right? We want our best foot forward. We want to be known by our strengths. We don't necessarily want the good, the bad, the ugly, the weaknesses to come forward. Okay, so this definition, secular definition, dictionary.com definition, in fact, of showing emotion or allowing one's weakness to be seen or known, that's what they would say is vulnerability, okay? How does that then translate to a marriage relationship? The first one at the very top, Arlen's gonna step into with the four pieces, is we're gonna start with knowing.
So as we think about this idea of knowing, okay, that's the first idea if we are going to be vulnerable with each other, there must be a level of knowing. And we like to kind of lay out the opposites as well, because sometimes it's easier to see something by looking at the opposite. So the opposite of knowing would be vague, right? If you don't know something, it's kind of vague. It's kind of misty. It's kind of foggy off there versus this clear, this real knowing that can happen. There's power in knowing. Jeremiah has a wonderful passage. In the passage, he says, "Don't let the wise man glory in his wisdom, or the rich man glory in his riches, or the strong man in his strength, but let him that glorieth in this, that he understands and knows me, the Almighty God," right? That's the power that we have to know the Almighty God. And in a marriage relationship, we have the power to know each other at deeper and deeper depths. The danger is, if we're not careful, is we can stay sometimes in this vague or this kind of surface level type relationship. There's a graphic that we like to consider because there's different levels of knowing. And so I'm lay some out here and just give some examples, but just different levels of knowing about somebody.
Or sharing,
yeah. So there's the first level. That is kind of like the facts level, right? You can know a lot about a lot of people at that facts level. We know kind of who they are, where they fit, their family, their background, what they do for life, that kind of thing. There's a lot of facts that we know. And I'm guessing as a spouse, there's a lot of facts that you can kind of lay out to each other. Maybe you knew each other well before you were married. Maybe you came from the same backgrounds. Katie and I did not. We didn't know each other until just a couple years before our marriage. She's from far away in Lester, Iowa. I was from Gridley, Illinois.
Western territory.
There was a wide difference there. And so there was an early part of our marriage where it was just about knowing about where did you go to high school? What was high school like? What did you like to do? What was your childhood like?
Right.
All of these things that we did not know. There was a facts level. And when you start a relationship with someone, that's usually where you start. That's good and that's right and that's proper. You start with the facts level. You usually can't sit down with someone on a plane and tell me the deepest, darkest secrets in your heart, right? You know, you're going to start with just some basic questions. But that's the first level. The second level, then, you get to this place of I think, okay? Maybe you start to share a little bit more about, you know, this is what I think about this. I wonder if this type of thing, right? And then the next level, there's another level of vulnerability. I hurt. It's another level. I am hurting here, or this is bothering me here. You see how we're going deeper in depth, more vulnerable. The last level would be, this is who I am, right? We are known as we are known, as we heard about this morning already. There's a depth of knowing that takes place there. This is who I am. Okay, so these different levels are a natural progression that takes place really in any relationship that's going to have a deep depth to it. But I want to put it in the marriage context here. How deep of knowing are we able to go in our marriage relationships? How often do we kind of stay at this facts level? How much do we go to this place where there's more open sharing to where you and your spouse can say, this is who I am at the core of my being? That's the depth that he's desiring for us to have. That's the depth in that Jeremiah verse that God is desiring for us to know about him. And as our marriages are a reflection of that relationship he desires for us, he wants us to have that level of understanding. Now, life is busy, and there are things that have to happen, right? And there are logistical conversations that need to take place. It's not saying that, you know, after you've been married for 5 years, you should not be doing these things over here and just be down here in this deep level. That's not what we're saying here. We're saying if we're not careful, what can happen is we just kind of gravitate towards the safe, the surface, and there's an intentional effort that makes us go deeper and deeper and deeper into it.
This is easy, is it not? Where do the kids have to be? What meeting do you have? Where would you like to travel? Things of that nature. This is easy. This is conversational. In a marriage relationship, our most intimate relationship God has blessed us with here on this earth, He is asking us to not just stay in the facts. We stay in the facts with the person on the airplane or the stranger we meet at the gas station, right? You would never expect your relationship with your spouse to stay there over time. So this arrow down here kind of represents an increasing amount of time, right? Those of you who have been blessed with 30 plus years of marriage in here, you know the facts. You're really good at the facts, what you like for dinner.
You've lived them out together.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So the facts are needed, like he said, but our marriage relationship, our most intimate, blessed relationship here on this earth, should not just stay here, okay?
Yeah.
Likewise, you're not just going to wake up every morning with your spouse and be like, oh, this is the good, the bad, the ugly, you know, right? So there's a point in time of this is who I am, right? But to share this, you got to move out of that comfortable place and into a little bit like showing emotions and showing weaknesses. And to be clear, maybe this is like an opinions category, or I think we should in the future, let's consider with the finance, you know, it could be a multitude of things. This isn't just your spouse hurting you or you hurting your spouse, right? This is something hard really happened this week, and I'd like to share that with my spouse, right? This is a hard, I just had a conversation with a family member, and Arlen found me in tears, right? It had nothing to do with necessarily our marriage relationship, but being able to show that weakness, show that emotion, and that hard, right, is a vulnerability I'm sharing with him.
So what we're going to do, if you flip your sheet over on the backside, we're going to intersperse this with a little bit of reflection time, couples time, a little bit of time to share together. So on the top of your sheet on the back, we have a question, and we'd like you to consider and just do some reflection here. What levels of sharing do you have in your marriage relationship? When was the last time you went towards some of these deeper levels? What's your natural default? Or do you have activities or practices where that pushes you underneath the surface and to that deeper level? Okay, so I want you to take we're going to take about 2 or 3 minutes to give you a little bit of time to reflect and think about it. I want you to spend the first 30 seconds or so just reflecting at a personal level, just yourself. And then turn to your spouse when you're ready and just start sharing. What does this look like, this level of knowing and sharing in your marriage?
And if you're a type of learner where coming up with examples is easier in your mind, like can I think through some examples of conversations we've had recently where these levels were discussed or shared? Sometimes examples is a better way to think about this than like, okay, I think we have facts. Do you think we have facts? Yes, no. Okay, move on, right? So if you can actually think of some examples of these three specifically, I'd encourage you to do that. Okay, a few minutes, go. Okay, for time's sake, we're gonna keep moving on to a couple of the other quadrants here on the Venn diagram. The next one, after the no piece, and again, the opposite of no is vague, and I think once we start giving you some of these words and opposites, you'll see the continuum here, right? Because in your marriage relationship, you would never say, okay, on a continuum, our relationship is in the vague zone. None of you would say that. But if you'd say, oh, are we on the level 10 no zone, right? So it kind of gives you a caliber of where your marriage, a marriage checkup, if you will. The next one we're going to talk about is trust. In order to have vulnerability in marriage, trust is a key component of that piece. Trusting each other. The opposite of that would be something like doubt or unsureness. Okay? Scripture in Psalm 9 speaks to our trust in God. Over time, those of you who have been a believer for many, many years know that God is constant and faithful. They that know thy name will put their trust in thee. And in your marriage relationship, over time, your spouse continually is there for you, continually shows they care and so forth, right? That's a trust component where vulnerability is easier to give. It's easier to show my weaknesses and my emotions when I know that trust is there and foundational. Another graphic to show kind of that is going to be a triangle. Okay, in order to kind of show levels of trust and what that looks like, a few things need to be present, okay? The base of this one is going to be love, right? In order to be trust, have trust in your marriage. That love piece is there, that unconditional forever vow of love. Do you ever ask yourself the question, how can I best love my spouse today? How can I best love my spouse? And that's not, if I'm honest with myself as a wife, that's not how Katie wants to be loved. That's how looking at Arlen and turning towards him to gain that trust is saying he is most loved and honored and respected when I, right? Love is the foundational piece in this triangle of trust. The next level, listening. Such an easy word to write down, and yet a hard word to do often with our spouse and our marriage. It's a free gift. Did you know that? There's no cost to listening and to blessing your spouse with an active, attentive listening. So that's me making sure when he comes home for work or wants to talk and engage, like I put myself in the best position to listen to his day, to his heart. How do I best listen?
And vice versa, husbands, right? That we take time to listen and to hear and to acknowledge, you know, as that engagement goes on.
Putting our devices down, not multitasking, right? There's this like great like pride piece of, are you a multitasker today, society, right? Am I being efficient? I love to be able to make dinner, listen to a podcast, and help kids with homework. Do I do any of those three well, right? That's the question, okay? Listening. So love, listening is going to build that trust, is going to build that vulnerability in a marriage. The next one, empathy, right? Can I put myself in my spouse's shoes? In their shoes. Caleb's video of the blind man was a beautiful video illustration of that. Right? The switch in the wording, the switch in the heart from blind, please help, to it's a beautiful day and I can't see it, is an empathy switch, right? Do I empathize with my spouse? Or do I just kind of shove it aside and, oh, he's always, she can always, and this the is real, a repeat.
Yeah. Go ahead. And the real risk here can be that, I mean, we can identify empathy. We're getting to this place where it's like we fix it or we want to fix mm-hmm. it for them or make something go away. Whereas empathy is feeling with. Empathy is coming alongside and saying, I feel with you. I understand with you. And there might not be like a quick like, oh, just stop it or just, you know, stop feeling that way. No, this we're going to feel and lean together. And that's all tied into this love, listening, empathy. And then that leads us to that last
right. one. So that with me piece, I'm with you in your emotion. I'm with you in your heart. I'm with you in what you just shared is also, are you viewed your marriage as a team marriage? Is it you two together, right? Do I turn towards, are we in this life and in this heart and in these daily decisions, hard, easy decisions together, right? Can we do this together? Is there a team component there? Right? Are we communicating to our children, our grandchildren, our employees, our coworkers, our neighbors, that this marriage, we're in it together? It's not, you know, half Arlen, half Katie. It's us together in this marriage and what that means. And then going on to the next one, because it kind of dovetails nicely. And actually, I would say on that bottom triangle, it's probably, it could be right there with love, is going to be the word safety. In order to have vulnerability, to be able to show weaknesses and emotions in a marriage relationship, safety has to be there. Safety has to be there. Now, this can be the physical safety, obviously, of knowing that you're bodily, you're not harmed, there's not physical abuse. But I would think the majority of marriages, especially in believing marriages, actually there's an emotional safety that I think hits harder too, okay? And what I mean by that, I'll illustrate it better. The opposite of safety here, the word I want you to write down, is neglect. Okay. Neglect. And if that kind of makes you squirm, right? I would never say in my marriage relationship, I neglect my husband. But do I provide a safe place without things like, I'll use these stems. I take for granted, or I sometimes feel forgotten. I'm kind of utilitarian or for a certain purpose, whether it's a male role or a female role in that, right? There's a level of emotional safety that's not present if those stems of forgotten, I always feel, you know, alone in this, I feel used maybe even as the utilitarian piece. If that safety is threatened or neglected, it's extremely hard to have authentic vulnerability and what that looks like. Psalm 78:53 uses it. He says he leads them on safely so that they feared not. There's emotional peace in your marriage where sometimes you hold something back or you're not super willing to step into something. There's a fear there, right? There's a fear there. What will my spouse think if they... Okay, those are some stems to just think of in the safety realm, because that safety realm, should I flip it up and do this, is a piece of that trust, right? In order to have trust, there needs to be physical and emotional safety built in as well.
I want to build on that point, though, with that psalm about we fear not. Like, what do we fear? Often that fear can be born of this idea that I am just here kind of on my own, or I'm being taken for granted, or does it really matter?
That's another stem.
Right? And when you think about this pyramid of trust, you could put safety here as the bedrock, and safety in the sense that you're not neglected or taken for granted. Like, let me give you a silly example, right? I don't know how many of you have flown lately, but you know what happens when you get onto a plane and you sit down in your seats and they're about ready to take off, and then the stewardess gets up. And the flight attendant goes through all of those different safety instructions. Like, how many of you have really, like, deeply paid attention, you know, to those lately? Because they haven't changed a lot for about 47 years, right? They've pretty much been about the same. They still pull the belt out and all this kind of stuff. And sometimes they're trying to get your attention.
Help your kid before yourself, right?
Right. But we get to the point where we just kind of just take that for granted, or just kind of let that fade into the background. Oh, you know, I know that, or I don't need to learn anything. You know, so take your kids for the first time on the first flight, and they're like, "Well, what's going on? This is a really big deal. You know, are we ready to go with this?"
They get the brochure out and look at it, right? They're like zoned in on safety.
But now think about that with our marriages. Do we get to this place of where we almost take each other for granted, or even further, we start to neglect because you just assume everything will be okay? That can really get at that core of trust and safety. And you get to that place where we have to reassure. It's not a bad thing to reassure, here I am. I'm here and I will always be here, and there is nothing you need to fear. There is no fear, right? That's what God does to us. There's nothing need to fear, because I am with you and will be with you, as he says, till the end of the age. Right? So the power of this principle. Activity?
Sure.
Okay, so if you flip your page over one more time.
Because these two dovetail so nicely, the trust and the safety are put together there in the middle of the page. So for a few minutes, maybe self-reflect for a minute or two, and then kind of compare and share with your spouse. What limits safety in your marriage? Okay. Now, husband, you have a spot there, and wife, you have a spot there. This is to not point fingers. We're not creating a battleground here. Okay. This is for you to just personally reflect. Wife, what do you feel like creates or limits safety? Where do walls go up? Caleb gave now the avoider, pleaser situation, avoiders. Where do you tend to avoid? And that limits safety and pleasers on your end. What does that look like for you? So wife, write maybe down a few thoughts, and husband, what limits safety in your marriage, okay? And then turn to each other and compare.
If you haven't already, continue to share a little bit, or be thinking about how does safety get limited sometimes unintentionally in your marriage, or maybe intentionally. We want to move on to the last one here a little bit, and we're going to have one more reflection at the end, and then we'll open it up to some questions perhaps, or just any thoughts that occur to you at the very end. But the last one, and you'll see it really does, as Katie said, it kind of ties together, but the last one is on this idea of consistency, okay? A vulnerable relationship is based upon consistency. The opposite of consistency in this context is like haphazard or random. But it's really hard to be vulnerable and authentic with someone if you don't know what to expect. Again, I go back to that example of God. Psalm, I think it's 52, 53, says something to the effect of the goodness of God endures continually. Right? The goodness of God endures continually. You see that promise throughout the scripture that we know who God is. We know what he is like. If you go back to that example of that video from this morning, you know, do you think God approaches us with that still face? Or do you think God approaches us with that emotional face? And just think about the implications of that, the power of that, to know who the God is that we serve and that we worship. And now, how do we turn that into a marriage relationship where there is just a level of consistency that builds over time and builds that safety, that trust, that knowing that takes us to a place of vulnerability? You know, if you take a jigsaw puzzle, this is kind of jigsaw puzzle season, right, or towards the end, at least in the Miller household, and you shake it all up, a 1,000-piece puzzle, and you just throw it out on a table, you know, it doesn't it doesn't just come together, right?
It doesn't haphazardly.
Yeah, right? There's an intentional effort that takes place to put that together. And good marriages don't just happen. There is an intentional effort that takes place to make them known and consistent. They're built one relationship, one engagement at a time. I want you to think about, you know, do you have routines in your married life? And yeah, they vary and they change on the age of kids and what's going on, but do you have routines? Like almost to the point of a weakness probably. Like I love our morning routine, right? We kind of have, when we're home, we kind of have a pattern that we fall into. And, you know, I get up and then she gets up and then we're, you know, end up kind of usually somewhere close to each other, kind of reading our Bibles and praying or discussing things a little bit quietly together while we wait for the kids to get up. There's a routine that's built. There's a consistency that's built that gives me comfort and builds trust and vulnerability. Right? And it can get changed and it can get taken too far.
For fear you think it's like an utopian morning at the Miller household. There's like, I'm starting laundry, I'm getting meat out of the freezer. Like there's a lot of things that,
probably over-glorified that
just
a little bit.
Just to keep
there.
It real.
Yeah. But, and this isn't about like spontaneous people versus like routine people. This is, we're not talking personality differences here. We're just talking about the idea of consistently falling into these patterns together and then knowing what to expect and take it past that time management thing and take it to the level of reaction. We have an engagement and I know what to expect from Katie. And she knows hopefully what to expect from me. And we can almost read each other's minds, right? Sometimes in a social setting or whatever. That's the beauty of the depth of a relationship that goes to that level of vulnerability.
And to speak the opposite of consistency, if there's ever a time where your spouse is gone and there's something you are used to, dependent upon them for, whether it's a male-female role or something you kind of like emotionally have come to appreciate your spouse, when they're gone and something happens, you're really like, oh yeah, I should tell them I really appreciate, right? You've taken that consistency. I'll give you a real personal one lately of like getting a bat out of a house, let's say. So it was a circumstance, it was a role.
When you have a 100-year-old house, you have some things you find kind of here and there.
But he was gone, and therefore that consistency of like, he takes care of things of that nature. I had to put my big girl pants on and figure out a way to do this, right? But do you see how when it's taken, you appreciate it much, much more? Ask any widower, and they'll tell you within 30 seconds of something consistently in their marriage, they miss. Mm-hmm. Okay. Another way to look at this is think of a couple in your church or your community who you greatly respect. Think of a couple. Next time you're with them, just ask them. There's something you respect about them because I bet there's something in their life they consistently do. Whether it's a morning time or some engagement of a getaway or something like that. Great marriages are not jigsaw puzzles. They're just not thrown together, right? There's edge pieces and middle pieces and colors and patterns and things. Figure out what their edge pieces and their middles and their patterns and their colors are. There's something about their marriage you respect, and I bet I'm willing to, I put money on it. There's something in their marriage they consistently do to turn towards each other, to build that safety and trust and know. And that's why you respect their marriage. Okay, it's a great conversation to kind of lean into somebody maybe older who's been in married longer than you, or something about their marriage just to learn from.
Yeah, I'm going to do one more kind of overall caveat, and then we're going to turn you loose with your last question, and then give you a little bit of time, and then we'll have some open time at the end here. But I have a mentor in my life who challenged me one point, and he says, you know, it seems like what we do in life, if we're not careful, is we work, and then we take a vacation, and we expect that vacation of a few days to kind of fix everything.
And then we work,
and we take a vacation, and we expect that to fix everything. Versus the idea of a daily respite. Find a way to daily withdraw, daily find that pattern of consistency that's going to cause the healthy patterns in marriage that you want to have in this case. So put that into your marriage context. Marriage weekends are great. You know, that's why we have things like conferences and vacations are great.
So go on vacation.
Right? But don't get to the place where we think, okay, well, if we get into this setting, or if we withdraw into this place, we can fix everything in 2 days, you know, and come back and be fine. You have to figure out a way to build these daily respites, these daily patterns, these consistent conversations and opportunities and engagements that you have. Whether it's the evening walk together or the morning sit together or whatever those intentional, conversational, relationship building times are, that's where the healthy marriage, slowly but surely, piece by piece, starts to become really strong. Okay, so flip your page over to the last one, and we do some summation here. And we ask you to think about, okay, what areas of those four that we've mentioned here, no, trust, safety, or consistency, which area do you think is your strongest? And why, you know, and then which area do you think we need to grow in, and how do we begin to grow into that area? So I want you to take, again, 30 seconds individually, kind of circle or look at those and kind of identify them as an individual, and then turn to your spouse and spend a couple minutes talking about that, and then we'll pull it back together. Okay, some of you already started, but I encourage you to start, look to your spouse and just share a little bit which area you think you're doing well in and which area do you perhaps need to consider how to grow in.
One of Arlen and I's favorite things that we're humbled and honored to see is always just couples turn towards each other, laugh, giggle, like look at each other, maybe even have some awkward moments where, you know what, I don't know how to answer a question or something you're asking us to think about. That last question is hard. Like, what is one area we can grow in together to move forward, maybe a deeper vulnerability or a deeper authenticity? Any couples on that first one, though, which area are you strongest in? Did anybody nail it? Like, you guys were, you know.
You both had the same answer.
You both had the same answer. You, like, got it? Anybody? Good. Good for you. Good for you. Time and intentionality, right? The longer you're married. One of my favorite, you can think less of me if you'd like, fairy tale quotes is the quote that says, this is perhaps the greatest risk any of us might take, is to be seen or known for who we truly are. And the marriage relationship is that. It is risky. It is very risky to entrust another person with your good, bad, and ugly, right? But to be seen and known, it's a great risk, but there's a beautiful, beautiful reward waiting for you for that. So I'd encourage as you go out, continue to use some of these personal reflection questions, continue dialogue and so forth. But yeah, thanks for your time and intention. Knowing and authenticity and vulnerability was our goal. And hopefully you have a few practical questions and skills to leave with. So,
yeah. Any questions or thoughts or anything? We have just a few minutes before we transition to the next one. And if you're just anxious to spend more time together as a couple, that's good, right? This is a marriage getaway.
Or if you're twitching. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. First diagram.
Step one, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I think the obviously the proximity of time, you'll figure that out in one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Right, so there's accountability in that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably where more attention comes in anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whatever, you're like, that's who I am.
Yeah. The difference about this who I am versus this is who I should be, I really appreciate you sharing that. Because I want you to think about in this context too, like we have the ability, I think, in life to kind of live in a bubble off here by the side. And not let anybody in, or to put up a false persona, you know, or whatever, you know, a public persona we put on that, you know, this is what it is. But in a marriage type relationship, which I believe that's one of the opportunities that when God calls us into that intimate relationship like that, it's why it's reflecting who He wants us to be as His child, you know, God and the child. Is you can't hide, you know, over time. And so those things start to come out. And then lovingly together, we say, okay, this is not who I'm supposed to be. And I need to grow together, kind of become more, step into that space, in that place. I mean, just like, yeah, the sun just literally came out. And it seems like for the first time in a few days, right? It exposes those things in us that we maybe need to work together on.
Two practical examples, I think, sir, to your point, is after 10 years, saying that I have an anger issue and that's just who I am, she needs to deal with it, or I have intimacy insecurities, he needs to deal with it. We're not meant to stay in some of this is who I am pieces. There's growth in that. But to get to this level, right, there's a reason that this is, you know, taller and then less and then less and then less. You're not going to talk about those deep insecurities or issues the hard all the time, right? But there's a place, number one, to grow into my anger or my intimacy insecurities and not just stay there and say, well, this is who you married. It's what you get, right? Together, exposing his weaknesses and exposing my weaknesses, right? We can work on that together and not just say, this is who I am.
Good comment, good question. Any others, any other thoughts to share? Otherwise we have, thanks for being here. Thanks for being part of this.